BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of BDNG Meets Podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG. So today I have great pleasure of introducing Professor Carsten Fleur, who is Professor of Dermatology and Population Health Science at King's College. He's also the Director of the Global Atopic Dermatitis Atlas and also Consultant Dermatology in St John's, Guy's and St Thomas's. So a very busy person and has done some phenomenal work which we're going to discuss today. So welcome Professor Fleur, and could you just give a brief introduction? Obviously I've explained who you are, but just a little bit of background about yourself as well.
Hi Tina, yeah, thank you for having me on your podcast. I'm delighted to be here. So I'm both pediatrically trained as well as dermatology trained. So I have a passion for pediatric skin disease, especially eczema, what the causes are in early life, how we may be able to prevent it. Very interested in the severe end of the disease spectrum and what new therapies we may be able to use, as well as being interested in the axis between the mind and the skin. So important, not just in eczema, but that's my main area of interest, how that intense itching that's associated with eczema causes sleep disturbance and how that sleep disturbance may be feeding into a disrupted body rhythm and how that may even cause some inflammation in the blood and in the brain. And that's what we're looking at in the Mind and Skin project.
That's fantastic. And, you know, there's a lot more interest now in mind and skin. I know a lot of our listeners today are very interested and want to ask lots of questions, so this is a really valuable podcast as well. And we're finding out more and more information about the mind and skin links as well. You know, there's a lot more research and evidence that's coming through. So you mentioned obviously your massive workload with your pediatric population, but also the mind and skin. So could you just explain about the research that has already gone through, what you've actually done and the evidence that is coming through with the mind and skin?
So it's important that to understand it's not just a link from the skin to the brain. We have sensory nerves in the skin. Obviously, they mediate the itching through the spinal cord into the brain, but also that there is a way back through the nerves from the brain into the skin. And we know from research that has been done both in animals and in humans that people with long-standing eczema have got a lower threshold of experiencing itch and pain. And that's because the nerve fibers hyperproliferate. They develop more and more fingers, if you like, in the peripheral skin, making patients with eczema so much more sensitive to stimuli from the outside, you know, where there's pressure. Very often we hear from patients with long-standing eczema that they experience pain even just from simple things like a bit of wind, a breeze hitting their skin, and that the sensory nerves are also able to actively secrete chemicals that drive the itching in the skin. So closing that feedback loop in a negative way from the skin to the brain and from the brain back to the skin. And that may well be one of the reasons why we see, so much psychological and psychiatric comorbidities in these patients as well, anxiety and depression in particular, that, you know, the skin is so closely linked to the brain and there is inflammation, not just in the skin compartment, but most likely in the brain as well. And that's obviously something that we're very interested in the Mind and Skin project. We're not doing this alone. This is a large multidisciplinary project where we are bringing together pediatric sleep medicine, circadian rhythm science, so experts who deal with a body clock, people who specialize in brain imaging, and colleagues who are experts in the development of the brain, especially in early life. We're working with colleagues who are cognitive neuroscientists, And they have a particular interest in how systemic inflammation may be leading to brain inflammation. We even have immunopsychiatrists. I didn't know they existed as a species before we started the project in the team, and then experimental psychologists as well. And when we started off by showing, I just had, you know, I had this idea for many years, Tina. I always felt as a dermatologist, I was just scratching the surface and not really delving into this issue of sleep disturbance, nighttime scratching enough. I felt I was just treating symptoms. And Absolutely. So I received a video from parents who were really distraught about their five-year-old scratching at night. And the video is showing exactly that, this child in their sleep scratching intensely. And how heartbreaking that was for the parents. They wanted to share it with me. And I thought, wow, this is something we need to do something about. So I, rather than me talking and explaining in words, I showed that video to my sleep medicine colleagues and said, could we do something together? And I could see their eyes widening, and they really thought, wow, this is, we never really thought eczema was that bad. Most people think it's just a little bit of itching, isn't it, rather than anything else. And I also showed it to the neuropsychiatrists, and they equally were really enthusiastic. So we ended up putting that multidisciplinary team together, and we did a literature review, which we published a couple of years ago, that fed into the project, showing what's already been done in that domain. Some of it is animal research, but other research has been done on eczema patients, showing clearly the link with itching and scratching. But nobody has really tried to bring the mind and the skin together in the way that we're doing in this project.
That is such a powerful story, you know, going back to the video. I mean, that is so powerful and just so important, you know, the family dynamics and the, you know, it's, we know that the itch can, you know, cause the sleep disturbance and the psychological distress with our patients. But to have that on a video and see it is, it really must have been quite a watch for you to deal with that. And fantastic that you've done, you know, on the back of that, have developed and the research that you're actually doing just now as well. Absolutely phenomenal, and a good story for our listeners today. Absolutely. So obviously it sounds like you've got a big team. I've never heard of immune psychiatrists either as well. I mean, that's quite something. And you mentioned there about rhythm science. Is that to do with the sleep, just to explain to our listeners today as well?
Yeah, circadian rhythm science is really captures everything that works according to a day-night rhythm in our bodies. And you'd be surprised, literally all physiological functions we have as humans have got a day-night rhythm, even down to the level of enzymes, for instance, or chemicals that facilitate chemical reactions in our cells have a body clock. They are sometimes, they're more active at night or during the day, or vice versa. You know, the liver as an organ is much, much more active during the night than it is during the day. And circadian rhythm experts look at all of these different aspects. They're based at the University of Surrey, they have a special environment where they can monitor people for days in, you know, it looks like a flat, but everything is monitored 360 degrees every day, from heart rates, respiratory rates, to everything else that you can think of, you know, body, skin temperature and so on. So that, yeah, that's what they study. And they're very interested in eczema as one particular angle to take in this context. The neuropsychiatrists are at the Institute of Psychiatry, Psychology and Neuroscience at Denmark Hill, and they're part of King's College London, where I'm a professor. So they are their own institute, if you like, and a world leading institute in all of these aspects of psychology and psychiatry.
Wow, so fascinating. I mean, fascinating work, and it must be so interesting for yourself. I mean, what I've read as well, you know, it's just fascinating, and so important for these patients. You know, it's the future, isn't it? Looking at all these different aspects of us, it's holistic patient care, really, in a way, because, you know, we're looking at not just the eczema, the AD, we're looking at the whole picture and how it affects the person as well. So as you say, you've got a fantastic team there, and absolutely fascinating. So How did all this start at the beginning? You had your video, you've obviously approached different people. What was the sort of first studies that you looked at and the age groups that you're looking at?
The age is really important because obviously children's brains develop quite rapidly throughout childhood and even into adolescence. And what they can do in terms of tasks too. So one of the things we're doing in Mind and Skin is asking people to go through an MRI scan, and in the scanner, we give them tasks. So we test their reaction time. We test how much information they can recall. And these are standardized batteries, as we say, that come out of ADHD research. And one of the reasons why we're using these batteries is that one of the professors from the Institute of Psychiatry, Psychology, and Neuroscience specializes in ADHD and has developed these batteries, these test batteries, for what we call functional magnetic resonance imaging testing in ADHD patients. And because we think there are some traits that eczema patients with no formal ADHD diagnosis and ADHD patients share, we decided to use those particular batteries. Now, you have to have a certain age to use those test batteries. You can't do that in a 5 or 6 year old. Children really have to be around 12. Now our study goes up to age 18. That's how we ended up with that particular age bracket for the study.
So again, ADHD, it's very prominent in in the media. A lot of people are talking about ADHD, and I think more and more people are coming into our consultations either with a diagnosis or obviously thinking about ADHD as well. So again, to have that link and have the evidence there with ADHD and AD is really quite important as well, because it does give confidence in clinicians but also the patient and the parent as well. So they have the MRI scan. Is that in London when they go
It
into
is
London?
at the Institute,
Yeah.
in short, IOPPN, at Denmark Hill. So they are attached to King's College Hospital,
Okay,
so
and how
in
long
central
does.
London, and they're part of our group of hospitals we call King's Health Partners. So that they are, they in that sense they're part of Guy's and St Thomas's. King's College Hospital is part of it, and the Royal Brompton Hospital is part of that group of hospitals now.
So quite a big group as well. So they've got the MRI scan, and is it just one scan, and how long are they?
Yeah, it's about an hour in the scanner. And I'm really surprised. I didn't really think that adolescents with eczema, because of the itchiness, would be able to stay still for such an amount of time. But we're getting really good brain imaging qualities. So credit to all those who've already participated in the study.
That's fantastic that they're, willing to do that. But again, it gives the confidence, doesn't it? Because people are looking at this, and also, it's so valuable for the parents as well, because they, again, it's giving them the reassurance that somebody's listening and somebody's actually doing something about AD as well. So they've had the MRI scan. Is there then some follow-up questionnaires, or how does it go from there?
Oh, I was just hesitating there earlier because I slightly lost my train of thought. So the second group that goes on to what we call systemic therapy, so they either receive tablet treatment, methotrexate, or an injected medication called dupilumab, they have a second scan about 4 to 6 months into treatment, just to see whether we're hoping, obviously, their disease improves, their itching improves as well, and whether we can see any before and during treatment changes on their functional MRI scan.
Fabulous. So for our listeners today, can we just clarify, if we're running our AD clinics with adolescents, children from 12 to 18, why would we refer to yourselves? What is the sort of essentials that you'd be looking for, and also how do we do that?
This is for the Mind and Skin study specifically.
Yeah.
So they have to be age 12 to 18. We are looking for three groups. One group is participants who are starting this medicine called methotrexate or dupilumab. So that's the group that will have the most severe disease. Then there is a second group that has got eczema, but they're just being treated topically, just so with topical corticosteroids, emollients, and then we have a healthy adolescent control group, exactly the same ages, because adolescents sometimes don't sleep well for other reasons. And so we want to make sure that we are not making assumptions that something is eczema specific, if it's maybe just something that's part of growing up in general terms. So that's why we've got that healthy control group as well. And anybody in those categories would be welcome to self-refer to our study.
That's fantastic. And where would our listeners find the information? I know, you know, the Mind and Skin, if you sort of look, even I think the National Eczema Society provides the links as well, doesn't it? So for our listeners today, where would they find more information about this?
Yeah, and maybe as part of the podcast, you can provide those links as well. So our departmental website has got an entry for the Mind and Skin study alongside our quite broad research program. As you say, the National Eczema Society has got a research tab on their website, and we are there too with the contact details for the study.
That's fantastic. And how often would the participant have to go through to London? How often would they need to go? How many times would they visit?
If they if they just do the one scan, because they're not starting the systemic therapy, then it could be done in one day for someone who's really motivated and not too worried about going through the MRI scanner. For those who are a bit more anxious, we can offer a mock scanner visit at Denmark Hill, King's College Hospital. But obviously that'd be a separate visit usually. And we do pay for travel expenses, and we also give people a thank you voucher for their inconveniences as well. So hopefully that's at least some incentive to take part in the study. And it seems that, you know, teenagers who are very interested in signs, you know, they get a sleep report as well as part of the study, like it. This idea about the MRI scanner, you know, something that a lot of the teenagers are very interested in. And something maybe even they can put on their CV that they've taken part in a research study, especially if they want to go into science or maybe medicine downstream.
That's a really good point about the CV, actually, something I'd not actually thought about, because I know how adolescents these days are so much interested in themselves, aren't they? We seem to have a cohort of young adults sort of growing up, you know, wanting to know about the sleep, wanting to know about how the body works, how wanting to know all this information. So I can totally understand how people are really keen to take part in this study. And as part of the BDNG, we will put on some links as well for the study. So don't worry about that at all. So you've got the three groups, and I know you're recruiting actively at the moment, and I'm sure our listeners out there will be able to refer some of their patients on as well, which would be really positive, because more information we get is definitely the better. So how long are you recruiting for, Professor Fleur? How long have you?
Until we finished recruiting, it's a short answer. The study is halfway through, and so we particularly need patients who are going on to these systemic therapies and still healthy controls, whereas we've got quite a few people with eczema have already taken part. So it's these two groups, the very severe end of the disease spectrum, going on to systemic therapy, and the healthy controls we're particularly looking for.
That's fantastic. So take note, listeners, today. We do need these patients. It is very, very important to support this study. And also for our listeners today as well, that is something that they can be part of the four pillars, get involved in research. So it's really, really positive for the nursing team as well. So I'm just going to go back to, you've mentioned before, sort of the family dynamics. You know, it can affect the family as well, not just the patient. Are families quite positive about the child being involved in research? Do you find a lot of positive you know, feedback that you receive?
Yeah, definitely. And we quite a few have taken part as siblings, where one has got eczema and the other one doesn't, but is a healthy control, you know, if they're within the 12 to 18 spectrum. So then that's worked very well. No, I mean, I think parents are very appreciative of the fact that we want to understand eczema beyond the skin. Yeah. And they very often feel that from their past experience, when they've been seen in dermatology, was very much just about lotions and potions and controlling the inflammation, but not so much about trying to do something about the scratching and the sleep disturbance. So they see that as a very positive thing to contribute to, and they realize that they're contributing to our better understanding of eczema in a holistic way.
Yeah, and I think in the years to come, it'll be a very different conversations we're having, isn't it? You know, to have all this mind and skin links, and it's totally fascinating when we're seeing the links that we have already. So there's a lot more interest. I know within our BDNG members, we have a lot of questions about it and a lot of interest as well, which is fantastic to see. So I'm sure we will find out more and more as the years go on. Is there anything that's totally surprised you with your research? Is there anything that you'd not actually thought about, or felt, wow, that is absolutely fascinating, that's come through with your results?
That's a good question. One of the things that we are doing is we are developing machine learning algorithms to look at the signals that we get from the actigraphy in the study. So I haven't really talked about what are the things we are doing apart from the MRI scans. And so sleep is measured in a very detailed way. Where essentially we're taking a sleep lab from the hospital environment into the home.
All right. And
so the participants are wired up for one night, as they would be in a sleep laboratory, to measure their brain activity in addition to the heart rate, their respiratory rate. But we also measure movement as well. And we do that through actigraphy. So that's a bit like one of this gadgets from Apple, where we're literally just continuously monitoring how people are moving in the bed through that. So that's wrist movement and potential scratch behavior, but also we put a sensor under the mattress, so we are monitoring how people are moving about in the bed. And one of the surprising things is that we do move a lot, maybe, as human beings. So even in the healthy controls, scratch behavior is separate and is different, and we can tell it apart through machine learning that we are applying based on video recordings that we've done as well. So that is for those who allow us. I mean, it's not compulsory, but quite a few of the teenagers have given us permission to have a camera installed in the bedroom. So we've got the camera recording, and you have all the output from the sleep monitoring devices and the actigraphy, and we can tell now a difference between, is it just scratching behavior or is it simple movement in the bed? But wow. I've never seen recordings from these sleep cameras before, and that's really interesting. So we can really make sense of the different output that comes through the sensors, rather than declaring everything just as scratching.
That's a high level of detail, definitely. And do some of the teenagers, do they want to see the videos as well?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And we do show them some of the output that they've generated themselves. So, they're getting some direct feedback on their own sleep. As I said, we do provide a detailed report from a sleep physician as well. So every single participant gets that as a bonus, if you like. We also, so you get reports of all the brain imaging, and if there was anything abnormal that was detected, then we would deal with that as needed. So in some sense, people are getting an indirect health check through being part of this study.
It is. It's a big bonus, isn't it? It's like an MOT, really, and absolutely fascinating. It just gives you total insight into, your behaviour as well overnight, which, is very rare to actually see that as well, which is fantastic. Do they have to do any other tests, any blood tests or anything?
Yes, we do blood tests, and we are looking for markers, so chemicals that indicate inflammation in the blood. We also do something called tape stripping. So that's a standardized way of using sort of circular cellular tape that goes onto the skin. It's non-invasive, doesn't hurt, doesn't cause any bruising. We're lifting up small amounts of dead scale from the skin, and through that, we're able to look at the immune profile. So the immune responses in the skin in these participants as well. And we even take samples for the skin microbiome. So the bacteria on the skin, because we think they're likely to be talking with a skin immune system, and they're probably part of this story, just trying to build as many different layers of information on our patients as possible.
Wow, that's again a lot of detail. I've already said that, but wow, the detail in the study is quite, you know, phenomenal. And how long would a person be involved in the study? How does it take? Days, weeks, or months?
No, if they do just the one scan, the one sleep assessment, then they come to us on the day, go through the scanner, the sleep equipment is applied, we take the samples that we were talking about just now, they then have their sleep assessment during that night, and then for the next 7 or so nights they wear a special headband that is able to measure their brain activity, not quite as detailed as this gold standard. It's called polysomnography. When you're wired up, not quite as detailed as that, but they wear that light headband for another week, and that's it. They don't really do anything else. They ship the equipment back to us, so they don't have to travel back into London for that. It's just for that one day, really, if they don't need the mock scanner, that they need to come an intended person.
Fabulous. So to do that in 24 hours. And as you said about the mock scan as well, that's really positive because, again, some patients might be a bit apprehensive about that. But it sounds like you've got a really supportive team. And talking about your team, I mean, naturally, I don't think anyone's trained in what you're saying, you know, about the sleep machines and things like this. Did your team need a lot of training when it comes to supporting the patients through this study?
Yeah, absolutely. We're dermatologists, obviously not sleep medicine experts, so we couldn't have done it without Europe's largest sleep medicine department just being down our corridor. And the sleep physiologists were so helpful for the first few months of the study when they showed us how to do the hookups, as we say, with the sleep equipment, and gradually teaching my team to do it. I mean, now we're fully self-sufficient in that, but we still have weekly meetings with the sleep team where we're looking at the output, we're getting the quality of the readouts. So they're still very much involved, even if we're doing the hands-on work with the individual participants.
That's fantastic. And it must be so rewarding for your team and yourself as well, you know, to learn all this new knowledge about sleep. I mean, it must just be a real insight for your team as well, which is another positive aspect to this study.
Definitely, yeah.
And also, obviously, we've talked a lot about what you are doing at the moment. Have you got any plans for the future at all, further studies or anything in the pipeline?
Relating to mind and skin, it'd be really interesting to see what comes out of it. It'll take another, you know, 2+ years before we see the results of that. Our dream would be that we could, once we know which centers in the brain are active when it comes to itching and scratching, that we could maybe influence itching and scratching behavior in a non-pharmacological way. So not with drugs, but with something we call neurofeedback, maybe certain meditation techniques or other mind-focused techniques, rather than just using sedating antihistamines, for instance, which make people drowsy, or just using the treatments we got available that settle the inflammation directly, but essentially just settling the symptoms rather than going more to the core of the problem.
Yeah, so it's looking at the bigger picture, isn't it? The psychological support. And, you know, again, you know, listeners today, you know, they're excellent. Nurses provide such good support. And, you know, for them to be able to help patients in the future as well with these aspects and understand it more, you know, it would be, it's just quite phenomenal, really. And it's so fascinating. What I've read is just, it's so fascinating. So it must be so rewarding for yourselves as the team. So we're drawing to the end of this podcast. I could definitely speak to you a lot longer about the work that you are doing, as it is so interesting. So just briefly before we end this podcast, just some key messages to our audience out there. Just again to reinforce how we can actually refer our patients on. And as I say, the BDNG will be advertising the links in our on this podcast as well. But Professor Flo, could you just let our listeners know again how they can refer patients in?
Yes, thank you. So anybody listening, if you are either a teenager or you are a family member, a father, a mother of someone with eczema, we'd be delighted to hear from you. You can go to our website. That's the Unit for Population-Based Dermatology Research at St. John's Institute of Dermatology, where you find an entry for the Mind and Skin Study or the National Eczema Society website link. Our email address is mindskin@gstt for Guy's and St. Thomas's Hospital.nhs.uk. As a teenager, you have to be 12 to 18 to take part and have time for a full day to come and visit us. We'll give you a voucher, as well as paying for travel expenses for you and family members who might want to come and see us. And you come to two hospitals. One is called Denmark Hill in London, King's College Hospital, and then also to Guy's and St. Thomas's Hospital at Westminster Bridge opposite Big Ben. It's an opportunity to see central London as well as part of that.
So you get a wee holiday on the back of it as well, definitely.
Yeah.
Do the sights of London. And is this open nationally? Anyone?
Well, there's the travel is the issue, isn't it, really? I mean, I guess shipping the equipment back is not so much so difficult, even from a longer distance. We've had people coming from certainly the South Coast, for instance, so places like Brighton or Ramsgate. We've had participants from those settings. They just use a courier service to ship the equipment back, but they obviously have to come in person for that one day. Yeah. We're happy to work around people's schedules. As you can imagine, we are completely fully booked almost for the summer now because people want to come during the vacation rather than during through school time. And I appreciate that. Obviously, it's important that people don't miss too much of their school. So we'll try to facilitate that as much as we can.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's absolutely fantastic. A wealth of knowledge there and a wealth of information for our listeners today. So I really, really appreciate you coming on to our BDNG podcast today. Thank you so much. And I'm no doubt we'll have part two in the future when we're updating all the evidence that is coming through from your such a valuable study. And it also, as a clinician on my clinical head, it does give me that reassurance, but also it gives our patients such support and value because, you know, somebody's actually listening to them and also providing, you know, new evidence and new links really between the mind and skin. So it's very, very positive. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me, Tina.
A pleasure. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.